sustainable seafood, gluten and dairy-free products, fair trade coffee and tea, and essential oils. Come visit Family Natural Foods at 910 West Grand Avenue, Wisconsin Rapids.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
They are our cuddlers and co-workers, purr machines and love bugs, and constant companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life so much better. When we face unexpected challenges in life, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people who love their pets and the pets who love their people, ensuring these families stay exactly where they belong, together. And you have something to offer. With an open heart and mind, there is nothing you can't do. There's no gesture too small or too big when it comes to helping. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. You can help keep pets and people together. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Kirsten from Pentatonix. We've all learned how to cope with more time alone. With more time spent isolated or at home, the need for companionship has grown. If you've considered adding a pet to your family, please check with your local shelters and foster organizations. Stray pet numbers have grown immensely over the past several years, and the trauma caused to these animals is devastating. Adopt pets, they need us more than we know. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
This time next week, I'll be sick in bed with West Nile virus, thanks to a mosquito bite right in front of my house.
In 8 minutes, my daughter will be in an ambulance, having an asthma attack triggered by cockroaches.
I'm going to be bitten by a tick today. I won't even know it until Lyme disease turns my life upside down.
Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org, a public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the CDC.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com. I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. Another summer weekend, another heat wave. Extremely high temperatures are sticking around. CBS News correspondent Carter Evans.
Where I am here in Palm Springs, they experience this type of weather regularly in the summer, although for this length of time. That is the unusual part of this. It is just persisting. Really, there is no end in sight. It's expected to continue through the weekend.
Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear briefed residents about the recent severe weather in his state. Kentucky experienced the heaviest rainfall in its history Wednesday, bringing devastating floods.
We're certainly seeing more severe weather patterns year in and year out. And it means we have to be prepared. We have to build our roads and our bridges, our water and our sewer systems to be able to handle what previously wouldn't happen in 100 years.
The federal trial for former President Donald Trump in the classified documents case is set for May. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
This is really a compromise position. The prosecution wanted to go very quickly, and they wanted a December trial date. But the defense had said either don't set a trial date or at least push it until after the election. She said we have to set a trial date.
Homicides are declining across the U.S. CBS's Jim Krasula breaks down the new data.
Homicides dropped about 10% the first half of this year compared to the same time last year. The murder rate, though, was still nearly 25% higher than it was in 2019.
The report is from the Council on Criminal Justice. President Biden talked safeguards by tech companies to protect people from inappropriate uses of AI. CBS News tech contributor Ian Schur.
Experts believe that AI is going to disrupt millions of people's jobs in a very short amount of time. We need to consider how can laws be constructed to make sure that those disruptions are for the better good of humanity, but also don't have terrible impacts on people's daily lives.
A strike deadline is looming for UPS workers. It would be the biggest strike in 60 years in the U.S. if the Teamsters Union cannot reach a deal with the company by July 31st. General President of the union, Sean O'Brien.
They've rewarded Wall Street. They've rewarded CEO. They've rewarded high-level management people who have never touched a package. Now it's time to reward the people that touch those packages, the part-timers, the single moms, people that are working two or three jobs at poverty wages.
The Fed meets again Tuesday on Wall Street. The Dow notched another win yesterday, its 10th straight day of gains. This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
Ray Magliozzi here for eBay Motors. So you ordered a new air filter for your car. You try to install it, but it doesn't fit. So you take a little bit off the sides, but still doesn't fit? Well, you could try to sit on it. Or get it right the first time with eBay Guaranteed Fit. When you see the check, you know that part's going to fit. Air filters, brakes, headlights, over 122 million parts. Get the right parts at the right prices. eBay Motors, let's ride. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, have you done sports?
Yes.
What about weather?
Done that.
I've got it. The moon.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to James help Seth pick the next theme for this week's Seth Faces the Music. It's on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR. The problem is, he's done so many shows already, it's getting tough to find the next group of songs. Don't worry, though. It'll be fine.
Yeah, all right. You got me. I give up.
That's it. The theme for the next Seth Faces the Music will be...
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hey, this is Penny Pincher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered storms this afternoon. Otherwise, mainly cloudy skies expected. Highs around 84. Winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance for isolated storms tonight. Lows dip down to about 56. Mainly cloudy skies. Highs level off around 85. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 66.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Welfare, the good living of our listening audience, of everyone in our area and beyond, through Civic Media, the Civic Pints Initiative. We are encouraging you, all of our listeners and beyond, to give blood before the end of this month and certainly any time of the year, but especially this month. And if you do that, and you provide us with some information confirming that you have given blood in any location, any legitimate location that engages in this all-important life-sustaining initiative, send us a selfie. Send us some other information, some other kind of evidence confirming that you have, in fact, given blood as a part of the community effort to the URL, and we will provide to you through that mechanism. If you identify yourself, some wonderful thanks, some ways of saying thanks for doing that. You can get Brewers tickets. You can get State Fair tickets opening not too in a very near future. And also some Civic Media items. So all of that, Civic Pints, you can go online once again to the Civic Media website and the app as well. A lot of information about that specific initiative and the good things that come of it as a part of our larger community. That's where Civic Media is. That's where this broadcast is as well. Not only doing those good things for the community, but again, hopefully doing some education in the area of civics and understanding about these important issues in law, in government, justice in America. And so we begin with that all-important initiative of educating, inspiring, informing, and again, inviting you to the discussions that we have every Saturday morning. Let us begin, as I indicated, with the United States Supreme Court, some snapshots of what they have been doing just recently, some events, some activities going on, again, in Washington, D.C., but more than snapshots, actually, because they're hugely important, and they do, in fact, follow up on many of the stories that we have covered in recent broadcasts. We have gone through probably about 15, maybe 16, 17 of the major cases, the major decisions issued by our United States Supreme Court in this 2022-2023 term, identifying those not only by the substance, the meaning, but also the significance they have in defining who we are as Americans. This past week, some important initiatives in the United States Congress related to this all-important issue having to do with ethics, the ethics of the United States Supreme Court, focusing plainly, principally upon Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, but also questions being raised about other members of the Supreme Court, not only in the transparency of the monies that they have received in addition to their regular salaries, but more important, the issue of whether or not they should be deciding cases in which they themselves may have some personal interest by virtue of either a spouse, a partner, in the case of Clarence Thomas, or other affiliations, other friendships that they have had with people in their private ambit. Nonetheless, cases that have come to them in which those friends have had some interests. And both Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas have had those cases. They've decided those cases. They participated in them in ways that would have not have changed the result of those cases. But nonetheless, raising the issue and clarifying once again that under any good regime of jurisprudence and of rule of law, a judge who has a personal interest, a personal connection, some relationship to the parties appearing before her or him should recuse himself or herself from those cases, should leave the discussion, should not participate in the disposition of those cases. Why? Because it's inappropriate to do so. It suggests that there is an animus, a bias, perhaps, with respect to the resolution of those cases. And if nothing more, it suggests an appearance of impropriety in terms of the legitimacy and the rightness and the integrity of the decisions being made. All of those kinds of things we have talked about at great length before. All of them getting the attention not only of the American population appropriately, concerned about the legitimacy of the actions of the Supreme Court when it comes to these extracurricular connections, these things that are suggesting that perhaps some of these decisions are tainted by the connections that the members of the Supreme Court may have, not all of them, but some of them have had, and prompting the United States Congress to take a look at this, to determine whether or not the United States Congress should impose upon the United States Supreme Court a set of rules, some guidelines, some guide rails, some ethical principles and standards for their conduct going forward. We know that the Senate Judiciary Committee, under the auspices of the chair, his name is Dick Durbin. He is a senior senator from the state of Illinois, just to the south of us here in Wisconsin. He has been especially focused on this, trying to ensure that the Supreme Court's decision-making process and its look, its appearance generally, is of the highest standards. And so, a number of months ago, began to conduct investigations of this kind of thing, oversight of the United States Supreme Court, invited the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, his name is John Roberts, as you know, to come and appear and talk about these issues, these ethics issues that are continuing to dog the Supreme Court on a daily basis. And the Supreme Court Chief Justice declined to do that. He sent a letter over indicating, I'm not going to show up, but you may be assured, members of Congress, that the United States Supreme Court abides by the highest standards of conduct and propriety when it comes to issuing decisions, considering the merits of them. And while that is good to hear from him, it doesn't establish the code of ethics that applies to every other federal judge in America. Every other district court judge, every other appellate court judge throughout our nation is subject to an established, a knowable, and identifiable code of ethics that does in fact require them to be recused in cases where they have some personal interest, when they've got some reason, there is some reason to suggest that perhaps, at least from an appearance standpoint, they should not be involved in the case because of a financial interest, a familial interest related to someone else in their family, including a partner, a spouse of some kind. Anything but suggest that there is a reason to be concerned that their impartiality, which is at the core of the rule of law, would not be present if they were to continue to preside over the case. Judges do this all the time. State court judges and justices do this all the time in the interest of the public, ensuring that we've got legitimacy in those decision-making processes. They do this all the time. And so for that reason, the Congress, and specifically Dick Durbin and his Senate Judiciary Committee, have been looking at this issue, proposing a standard, a set of rules and regulations. When we come back, we're going to talk about what happened just this past week on that initiative before the Senate Judiciary Committee, affecting the future of the conduct of the rule of law in America, and specifically sending a message once again that the Supreme Court needs desperately to be compliant with fundamental rules of law and rules of regulation when it comes to recusals and the conduct of its day-to-day business in our high court. Come back right after this break, and we'll talk more about what happened on Capitol Hill this past week.
Does your vehicle have over 75,000 miles? Get maximum high-mileage engine protection with Syntec Full Synthetic High-Mileage Motor Oil, exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Right now, get 5 quarts of Syntec High-Mileage and a MicroGuard Select Oil Filter for just $34.99. Limit supply. Ask for Syntec High-Mileage at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Venture X card from Capital One gives you premium travel benefits, perfect for seeing Taylor Swift the Eras Tour. Presented by Capital One. Ooh, I do love her. Earn 5x miles on flights and 10x miles on hotels through Capital One Travel.
Enjoy your stay in Suite 13.
Whoa, 13? That's Taylor's lucky number. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, this is Penny Pincher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosures.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
With clouds at times. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's...
This is Morning Cannolis, and we are beginning this second segment of our first hour talking about the United States Congress and, yes, about the Supreme Court. And in our first segment, the lead up to this, the work, the action, the focus of Senator Dick Durbin and not all the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, but the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee focused on this notion that the Supreme Court, if it itself does not impose upon its members its own rules and regulations regarding ethics, and the Congress will do it. And Dick Durbin has repeatedly said that, not only being disappointed by the decision of the Supreme Court Chief Justice not to appear and talk about these things in person, but before, during, and after that proceeding, commenting upon the fact that it is now becoming timely. If it ever has not been timely before, it's always been timely, but is especially important now that the Supreme Court adopt and embrace this notion of having rules by which it is regulated when it comes to deciding cases, recusing members when it is appropriate to do so. This past week, the Senate Judiciary Committee took some major action, again, in the time when the Supreme Court itself promising to abide by the highest standards, but not doing anything to articulate those rules and regulations. The United States Senate, or at least the Judiciary Committee, saying, all right, if you don't do it, we will do it. And so what has happened in the past is that Senator Sheldon Whitehouse and others introduced legislation that calls for the establishment of that ethics bill, backing from more than 24 Democrats in the Senate, require the Supreme Court to adopt a code of ethics for all the justices and implement specific procedures to handle complaints of judicial misconduct, which regrettably has been much in the news recently. Would also require the High Court to impose more rigorous rules for the disclosure of gifts and of travel and income, all those kinds of things that we have seen in the news in recent times by the justices and also significantly by their law clerks, who, of course, also have a role to play in this process, as we well know. The measure calls for the Supreme Court to establish procedural rules that require each party in a case or some other matter pending before the Supreme Court filing friend of the court briefs, sometimes called amicus briefs. We've talked about those situations where you're not a formal party to the case, but want to be heard on the merits of the case. A lot of that goes on today appropriately before the United States Supreme Court. If you are a party in a case, if you're an amicus party, a person submitting one of those briefs, you also have to disclose gifts, income, reimbursement provided to the court's members, and the legislation also hardens rules for when justices or judges must recuse themselves from cases. So it's an omnibus bill, again, imposing not only the strict standards for this going forward, just like those apply to all of the lower court judges, the appellate judges, and the district court judges, but also along the way, establishing a mechanism for its enforcement. And so that's the legislation that has been out there. And this past week, the Senate Judiciary Committee, again, under the leadership of the chair, Dick Durbin, took a vote on that. Again, awaiting the Supreme Court to do something on its own, not hearing anything from across the parking lot, as Dick Durbin has said recently. He described this as the crucial first step in restoring confidence in the High Court. He said in advance of the vote of this past week, he said, unlike every other federal official, Supreme Court justices are not bound by a code of ethical conduct. They are most powerful judges in America, and yet they're not required to follow even the most basic ethical standards. He also commented that if some of the kinds of conduct in which we have seen reported from our present Supreme Court members, if that conduct would have been pursued by members of Congress, they would have been subject to ethics reviews by the ethics committees in the House and the Senate. And again, raising this notion, if the legislature itself is bound by these kinds of rules and principles, why is the judiciary, specifically the Supreme Court, not in that position? And I would add, as a member of the executive branch in previous administrations, similar rules attend to all certainly appointed members of the executive branch, but also civil servants as well. All sorts of rules and regulations regarding those situations where we cannot and should not decide cases, disclosures of our connections, our friendships, those kinds of things, appearances what we may make in our legitimate pursuit of our roles in those positions, all of that, a part of the executive branch as well, but not the Supreme Court. And so this past week, a significant movement by the Senate Judiciary Committee, they took a vote on this. They took a vote, they did what's called a markup, which is the legislative way of saying we're sending this bill now on to the full body of the particular chamber, in this case, the Senate. And by an 11-10 vote, right down party lines, the legislation was approved by this committee. And again, the headlines, of course, say everything. One of the headlines says, Senate panel approves a Supreme Court ethics bill with dim prospects. And that's the second part of this, of course, because it goes to the full Senate. Plainly, Chuck Schumer, who's the majority leader there, has said, we're very enthusiastic about this bill. He may or may not bring it to the full Senate, but the reality is it will not pass there. Why? Because you need 60 votes there. The filibuster prevents that from happening. Unlikely that Republicans will join Democrats in sufficient numbers to get that passed. In the House, likewise, similar legislation has been pending for a long period of time. No movement through any committee there, including the House Judiciary Committee. But this past week, a message to America that the Congress itself is doing something when the United States Supreme Court does not. A message across the parking lot to which Dick Durbin refers, to the Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice, and the others, that they're serious about this, and the problem is not going to go away. I suspect fully we'll get more reporting upon other problems, other appearances of impropriety, perhaps other situations where recusals should have been had but did not take place. A significant rule of law event of this past week when a member of the leadership of the Senate Judiciary Committee takes this effort, brings it to a full vote, it passes, and now goes on for almost certain defeat if it is voted on by the full Senate. But nonetheless, sending this message about the importance of this ethics concept for the United States Supreme Court. United States Supreme Court was back in the news again for another reason we're going to chat about as this first hour continues, in particular going back to this case involving Alabama and voting rights. Once again, we talked about this in the past, this case called Allen versus Milligan, in which the court effectively reaffirmed the requirement for Alabama to redraw its districting lines, its congressional districting lines, to ensure that there were at least two congressional districts that were majority black. This past week and just yesterday, some very important news coming out of Alabama with respect to the compliance or non-compliance of the legislature there to that all-important case. We'll talk more about that right after this break.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734. Locally grown, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Petty Pitcher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. I grew up on tour with my parents. Kind of different, but we bonded over music just like other families do over sports, camping, or other interests. And we talked. Little everyday conversations from silly to serious that built a foundation over time. Honest conversations, like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life. And I was so grateful that you and Mom had become these sober, stable people who were always there for me.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs, whether it's music or anything else. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered storms this afternoon, otherwise mainly cloudy skies expected. Highs around 84, winds out of the west 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance for isolated storms tonight, lows dip down to about 56, mainly cloudy skies. Highs level off around 85, tomorrow a blend of clouds and sun. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 66.
Not done that on its own initiative. Probably unlikely it's going to be receiving any favorable treatment by the Senate. Nothing pending in the House either. At the same time that is going on, we also have this Alabama case. Recall that we chatted about it. It's called Allen versus Milligan. Way back in 2021, the Alabama legislature drew some congressional maps that indisputably gave black voters far less representation in the House of Representatives. Their population numbers would suggest about the population of the state of Alabama, about 28%. people of color. And so out of the 7 congressional districts, the notion was that at least 2 of those should probably be majority black districts so that members of the voting population there would have the best chance of electing, selecting, and sending to Congress people of their choice. And so ultimately, the United States Supreme Court a number of weeks ago said, in this case, Allen versus Milligan coming out of our high court, that the court sees no reason to disturb the lower court's careful analysis that this voting line drawing, that Alabama's extensive history, as the Chief Justice said, of repugnant racial and voting-related discrimination, undeniable and well-documented, directing the legislature to go back and do what the lower court had directed it to do, which is create that second majority black district as you go back and redraw these lines. Well, this past week, we had some significant movement, not positive movement, when it comes to that directive from the United States Supreme Court. We know that on Monday, something significant happened. A subcommittee, a committee of the legislature, came forward and reviewed all this, put together something called the Community of Interest Plan in Alabama, and that committee endorsed this plan by a 14-6 partisan vote, Republicans voting yes, Democrats voting no, that did not, in fact, create that second majority black voting district. One of the leaders said this stunning thing to say. He said, there are districts that can be drawn that may not be majority, but the performance analysis, he described this as performance analysis, may prove that they can elect Democrats or Republicans. These are opportunity districts, he said. Again, most people looking at this looked at that throughout the course of the week and said, that is not in compliance with what the Supreme Court specifically directed you to do. Not creating opportunity districts, but creating districts where, in fact, members of the population who are black have the opportunity, not because of the ways in which the legislature is drawn, but because of their own decisions to vote as they like, have the opportunity to send members of Congress to Washington, D.C. to represent them. And so we waited all week to see what the full legislature would do. And sure enough, just yesterday, the full legislature considered the proposal from this subcommittee, this legislative committee that recommended this community of interest plan that did not create the second majority black district. And sure, just yesterday, through this new congressional map, determined that they would do something that was inconsistent, not compliant with what the Supreme Court had directed. They described this as doing something close to it. And again, after a month or so of this Supreme Court ruling telling them what to do, what they did was they created 6 majority white districts and 1 majority black district. Significantly, what they didn't specifically, they adjusted some things along the way. They backed this plan that would increase the share of black voters in one of the state's 6 majority white congressional districts to about 40% from 30%. Okay, so the numbers of black people in this particular district are increased. That is not black majority. And the map also dropped the percentage of black voters in the existing majority black district to about 51% from about 55%. So again, it remains just slightly majority black. And again, in Alabama, as I said, about 28% of the residents are of color. And for that reason, you would anticipate that 2 of those districts would be majority black. Did not happen this past week in the Alabama legislature. And the question now is, what happens next? Well, there is, in fact, a hearing coming up. The federal court, once again, deciding to review this matter. It had done so. It scheduled this even before the vote was taken just yesterday. And so this is going back into federal court. Obviously, people on both sides ready for this challenge, not only to determine what, in fact, the federal court is going to do. Plainly, the requirement here is that the federal court not only endorse, but direct the legislature to do what the Supreme Court told it to do and create this second district. One could make the argument the legislature this morning is in contempt of the United States Supreme Court for not doing what the Supreme Court directed it to do. This is going to go back into federal court. The federal court has a number of different options here. Could certainly make that directive pursuant to the case, once again, this decision in Allen versus Milligan. Could also appoint a special master to, if in fact the legislature simply will not, cannot do this, according to what the Supreme Court said, a special master can come in and draw those lines, which then the federal court could adopt and impose upon the legislature, impose upon Alabama, but do that in a good way that accomplishes exactly the voting rights initiative and focus that the Supreme Court intended to have happen there. It is a significant issue, a huge issue, regarding not only this case involving voting rights for Alabama, the capacity of all people to have their votes counted in America, in Alabama and beyond, but also raises this larger issue of the significance of what's going on here, the rule of law. We have got a state legislature, elected people from the state of Alabama, who have told the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, we're not going to do what you told us to do. Now, there's precedent for that, plainly, regrettably, in America. We know way back in the 1950s, after the Supreme Court and Brown versus Board of Education told our schools throughout the nation that they needed to segregate to ensure that students of all colors are sitting next to each other, that separate schools are inherently unequal, that there are good things that come from that sort of racial mix and that diversity in our classrooms. And the Supreme Court said that with clarity, a unanimous decision. And what happened in the wake of that, of course, is many school districts likewise said, nope, we're not going to do that. The Supreme Court has told us to do that, but we're deciding not to do that. And that required a second round of litigation, much as what may be happening now here in Alabama. The Supreme Court came back in a case called Brown versus Board of Education 2 and said, no, we meant it. Do this. You're required to do this. And if, in fact, you don't, other things will happen. We know that in the wake of that decision, it was the decision of the Attorney General to enforce Brown 2 and Brown 1 by requiring U.S. Marshals to go down there and ensure that the classrooms were segregated by escorting the boys and girls of color into those classrooms to ensure that they had an education there. We hope that doesn't happen here, but we do have a similar standoff, if you will, here in this circumstance, where you've got a legislature who has decided not to do what the United States Supreme Court has told it to do. We'll see what the federal court does, presumably in the coming week, maybe the coming days even, to enforce that Supreme Court directive as a part of the rule of law and the fundamental notion that even though we may not like everything the Supreme Court does, it remains the rule of law. Certainly during the course of this broadcast in recent weeks, we have chatted about the merits and, yes, the demerits of some of the decisions. We can disagree about what our legislature does, what our executive branch does, what our Supreme Court and other courts do. That's a part of America, too. It's also a part of America that we can talk about those things openly. We can talk about all of those things. What we can't do, and should not be inclined to do, is to disregard the rule of law, whether it's legislative, whether it comes from the executive branch, especially when it comes from the courts, telling us clearly what we need to do. This is in violation of those fundamental principles and doctrines by which we live. We look to the federal court in the southern part of our state to enforce what the Supreme Court has done, require the Alabama legislature to draw that second majority black district, and to make certain that the Voting Rights Act and the aspirations that it has for ensuring the franchise for people of all immutable characteristics, including people of color, have the right to vote and have the right to representation in our United States Congress. Another footnote coming out of the Supreme Court also just this past week, and it indicates once again that the Supreme Court has not gone completely out of business. Maybe it needs at some point to revisit the Alabama matter. We'll see how far that goes. But we also know that during the course of its period of about 10 weeks between about last week or so and the time that it starts its new term, the 2023-2024 term, Supreme Court still takes on cases. It's already accepting cases for the new term, including about 22 cases already placed on its docket for this coming term. And also takes up emergency petitions. And sure enough, just this past week, the Supreme Court did review a death penalty case, again, coming out of Alabama. Death penalty case. The matter happens to deal with a fellow named James Barber. James Barber was convicted and sentenced to death in May 2001 murder of a 75-year-old woman after he admitted killing her with a claw hammer at her home in Harvest, Alabama, and fleeing with her purse. Heinous crime. horrific crime. And again, based upon the adjudication of that charge against him, he is not only found guilty, but the death penalty is imposed. And again, the Supreme Court has said that the imposition of the death penalty by states, if the legislatures choose to make that available to juries and judges, is not contrary to the Eighth Amendment prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. But that notion is also surfaced again this past week when there is a division among the Supreme Court about what to do with this latest challenge to the imposition of the death penalty with respect to Mr. Barber. Here's how it comes about. The three liberal justices, again, especially led by Sonia Sotomayor, rebuked and pushed back on the majority's decision just yesterday to allow the execution of this Alabama death row inmate, Mr. Barber, to go ahead. He had raised concerns about the state's record of botched lethal injection procedures. And again, by 6-3, the court yesterday permitted that execution to go forward. And Mr. Barber was, in fact, put to death around 2 a.m. local time in Alabama. Just last year, in three consecutive executions by lethal injections, prison officials in Alabama had spent multiple hours looking for the prisoner's veins in an attempt to set the IV lines. Two of the men survived those horrific events, that is, the attempted executions botched by the Alabama authorities there, and reported experiencing extreme pain, including in one case, nerve pain that he said was equivalent to electrocution. Sonia Sotomayor identified all of this in her case and said, you know what, we need to stay the execution so that we can ensure that Alabama has this all in order. The three liberals on the bench said the Eighth Amendment demands more than the state's word, that this time will be different. They added the majority should have granted Barber's request. The majority did not. The majority did not. By a 6-3 vote, the death penalty, again imposed yesterday in the state of Alabama, work by the Supreme Court, underscoring again larger issues related to the Eighth Amendment, to the imposition of the death penalty, and yes, the mechanism by which we do it, which can in and of itself constitute a violation of the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, even the way that states may in fact execute that Eighth Amendment opportunity, that Eighth Amendment legislative decision to impose it in appropriate cases. Lots of things coming out of the Supreme Court even this past week. We're now going to turn in the remainder of our hour this morning and certainly into the next hour too, as I indicated at the top of our hour, all sorts of cases, civil and criminal investigations, prosecutions going forward. We're going to take some inventory over the next many minutes of the matters facing the former President Donald Trump and others who are now out there, specifically focusing on something that happened in Michigan just this past week. Let's start with a couple of civil matters that we have talked about before. This involves E. Jean Carroll. We have spoken about her before. She is the woman who alleged sexual assault, rape, by the now former president way back in the mid-1990s in a Bergdorf Goodman department store in New York. We know well that in the wake of her arguing and presenting evidence not only of that assault but also of the defamation by the now former president, that she got a $5 million verdict against the former president for the statements he made about her and also for the underlying assault. This past week, a federal district court judge made some important rulings about the importance of that verdict. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what those are and why it is that Donald Trump suffered a loss this week in that connection and continues to face other investigations, both civil and criminal, still out there in the courts of America.
This is Penny Pincher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
Family Natural Foods is proud to serve our wonderful hometown. They are a family-run business committed to providing personal guidance to help customers meet their health goals with reference books, natural supplements, and 75 years of experience. You will find organic, local, grass-fed meat, sustainable seafood, gluten and dairy-free products, fair trade coffee and tea, and essential oils. Come visit Family Natural Foods at 910 West Grand Avenue, Wisconsin Rapids.
Could there be a better name? Auto Value Parts Stores. They aren't just about air fresheners or fuzzy dice. Auto Value Parts Stores are all about parts, auto parts, and advice. Pros who know auto parts with tons of tips when you need them the most. You want real value? Don't go to a place with a cute name. Go to Auto Value. Could there be a better name? I didn't think so. Your Auto Value Parts Store. We've got the parts. We've got the smarts.
Are you ready to start a meaningful career in healthcare? Are you looking for a job that fits your work-life balance? Become a certified direct care professional today and make life better for older adults or people with a disability. WISC Caregiver Careers makes it easy with free online training plus earn a $500 bonus. See your name on Wisconsin's Certified Direct Care Registry. Sign up today at WISCCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Four, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
We are back in this final segment of our first hour here in Morning Cannolis, talking once again about the rule of law and beginning our inventory, our review of all of the various cases, civil and criminal, pending right now involving our former president, focusing right now upon this E. Jean Carroll verdict that she got a number of weeks ago, finding that he had, in fact, not only defamed her, but also engaged in this assault. The federal district court judge reviewing that and a motion by the former president to reduce that $5 million verdict. The judge saying, nope, we're not doing that. The verdict stands. The jury determination factually supported. And also finding that even though the jury verdict and the verdict form itself did not speak to this with particularity, the judge saying there's no doubt that the finding of the jury spoke loudly about the nature of this assault, which was in the nature of rape. And so a major victory again for E. Jean Carroll in supporting that jury verdict, but also affirming once again the capacity of our courts to address these kinds of things even years after they take place. We know as well from our discussion last week that E. Jean Carroll has a second very parallel case also going on in the wake of the Good decision by the United States Department of Justice not to continue to represent the former president in connection with another case, same kinds of allegations involving statements he made when he was the president of the United States of America, defaming E. Jean Carroll. That case now also proceeding ahead again in the courts in New York. The judge there scheduling a trial for January 15th of next year, a ways down the calendar here. That happens to be the same day of the Iowa caucuses, which again indicates that a lot of these cases we're going to talk about are going to be happening, activity happening in them during the same period of time when a lot of the campaigning already underway is going to reach a fever pitch. Another matter that, again, is gone pretty much under the radar this past week, Michael Cohen. Remember Michael Cohen? He was the former president's fixer in many ways. Also testified before the grand juries investigating the president, testified before the Congress, plainly has been a government witness in many ways. Michael Cohen had also brought a lawsuit against the Trump Organization in a dispute about over $1 million in unpaid legal bills. And during a court hearing on Friday, lawyers for Cohen and the Trump Organization announced that they had reached a settlement and the terms were confidential. Cohen had sued the Trump Organization way back in 2019, alleging that some of the agreements that he had, both written and oral, involved his providing legal services, legal bills that were not being paid by the Trump Organization. And again, we don't know the specific terms of this settlement, but this $1 million claim somehow resolved in the courts and averting a trial that was set to begin on Monday. Those couple of civil things pending, we know as well that also in New York, we have got other matters pending. Let's talk. Begin to talk about some of those as well. We know about the hush money case. It's been brought by Alvin Bragg. He is the DA in Manhattan. This is the case in which the DA has charged Donald Trump with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records, and that all stems, all derives from this hush money payment that he made to a porn star way back in 2016, obviously in advance of the 2016 election. That case, again, charged, that is a felony charge based upon the nature of the way that this case is charged in Manhattan. Proceeding also to trial, that coming up for trial in March of 2024, again, right in the midst of the campaign and the caucuses, the primaries will be taking place during that period of time. The judge, his name is Juan Merchant, has set that trial even as the pretrial matters have been proceeding. We know as well that not too long ago, the former president attempted to get Judge Merchant off the case and said that he would be biased. He moved for the recusal of that judge, and Juan Merchant denied that request, finding that there was no basis for him to remove himself. Again, a part of this omnibus approach that the president, former president, often undertakes to attack in all areas. We're going to see that repeatedly this morning in this case and in others. As a part of that omnibus attack upon this state criminal prosecution against the former president, again, for making these payments, again, in violation of state law, one of the things that Donald Trump did through his lawyers is he went to the federal court and said, you know what, because I was a former president and because this matter involved, according to the Trump lawyers, a matter that related to his conduct that he engaged while he was president, that was the allegation, this matter should not be in state court, but should be removed to federal court. And this past week, a federal judge who entertained that motion, a federal judge said, no, we're not doing that. The judge's name is Alvin Hellerstein. He signaled in the hearing that he had last week on the merits of this motion. He was very much predisposed against moving the case from the Manhattan DA attorney, the state forum, into the federal court. It's a fairly extraordinary remedy, the kind of thing that would be dramatically unusual to happen. And again, the federal judge there looked at this allegation that somehow the conduct here, the payment of these hush monies in advance of the election of 2016 related to conduct while Donald Trump was president, simply had no merit at all. He said this. He said, hush money paid to an adult film star is not related to the president's official acts. It does not reflect in any way the color of the president's official duties. And again, the case not going to federal court, remaining in the state court there where it should remain. This case, again, among the significant witnesses is going to be Michael Cohen, because he was one of the people who plainly was the one who got directives, according to the allegation, from the former president to accomplish the financial transaction that got the money to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet about this affair that the former president and she had. Michael Cohen, a major witness in that case, again, going to trial in March of 24 and happening, still going to be proceeding in the state court. The federal court judge just this past week saying no, Judge Merchant will continue to oversee this case. And the notion that this case should somehow go into federal court, far-fetched, is what Judge Hellerstein says, and it will remain in the state court where it was initiated, and the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, going to continue to prosecute that case in that forum. So those are the cases, again, pending, coming out of the DA's prosecution initiative there in New York. We've got more, of course, also happening in venues around the country. Let's begin to talk about some of those as well. We know as well in the state court that there's a separate civil piece of litigation going on. This is the case involving, brought by the Attorney General of the state of New York. Her name is Letitia James, and she has brought this major case alleging that the Trump Organization and the Trump participants, the family members themselves, engaged in fraud in the valuation of properties. That case still going ahead. The case there in New York State, that's a civil case brought by the Attorney General. That case scheduled to go to trial in October of this year. And so we'll also put that on the docket of matters out there where the former president has dates in the courts of our United States of America. When we come back for our second hour, we're going to focus more upon these various cases in state court, in federal court, having to do specifically with January 6th and other matters facing the former president. Stay with us for that important discussion.
Having low income can mean making tough choices. Choosing between paying for food or medication or a place to live is a reality for many people. Do you know someone who could use some extra help? Find out about the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, administered by Social Security. You could receive monthly SSI payments if your income and financial resources are low and you are 65 or older, or an adult or child with a disability or who is blind. SSI is money you can use to help pay for basic needs, like putting food on the table, keeping the lights on, paying the rent. It can mean new shoes for growing feet or help with medical needs. Call 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSI to schedule an appointment or start to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSI. This message produced by Social Security.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.